Everybody, this is Sarah Benincasa, and this is Well, This Isn't Normal, a show about how life isn't normal right now. Not that it ever is, but we do get used to something, don't we? Whatever my normal is probably different from your normal, or maybe it's similar, who knows? But, you know, it ain't this. I'm glad to be here with you, though, and I really, really appreciate you being here. I especially appreciate getting to talk to people. It keeps me from getting super lonely here in quarantine. I feel more engaged with folks than ever before, actually. I do meetings sometimes twice a day with my recovery group. I have a cat, Polly, who I adopted from Lux Paws. I really encourage you to adopt an animal if you feel you can afford it. Or you may find that the rescue organization that you seek will actually pay for all the veterinary bills up top and will provide you some food and some litter. For example, with my cat, I got some free litter, which was awesome, from her previous foster. I got a litter box. I got a carrier. She has had veterinary care and checkups. And, you know, a great thing, too, is if they're a bit older, they're not kittens or puppies, who are adorable, of course. They're less likely to get adopted. So if you adopt one, what a delightful experience. You may hear Polly in the background, as well as birds and cars and all different things happening here. My guest today is awesome. My guest is Roxane Gay. She's a best-selling author. She's a speaker. She has written scripts, I believe. Certainly has written comics. And I believe she's developed for film and TV, and, you know, she has taught, she has edited, she does a lot. And even someone as successful as that, and she makes sure to say, you know, in the pod, like, don't feel sorry for me, don't cry for me, I'm okay. But even someone as successful as that has lost income, a considerable amount, with things being canceled, speaking engagements being canceled. She talks about how her magazine came to an end at about the same time. So, again, Roxane does not ask for pity in any way. We just share on the podcast, and nor do I. I mean, I had a couple gigs canceled, and that sucked, but it's okay. It's all right, you know? I'm here, and I'm fortunate to have a day job. She's fortunate to have other work. And so for those of us who are fortunate enough to have some work right now, it's a good thing, and we do our best to pay it forward, and Roxane certainly has abundantly given away thousands of dollars by this point, just getting cash in people's hands, because she knows what it's like to struggle. She knows what it's like to need things. She knows what it's like to be in pain, and she speaks about that very beautifully and very with a great deal of empathy in her work. She's funny, she's dry, she can be sarcastically hilarious. Just a really interesting person. It's Roxane Gay, by the way. So if you want to Google her, go for it. And you can find her on Twitter and all those places, but right now you can find her on this podcast. So enjoy. Oh, hi, Roxane Gay.
Hello, Sarah Benincasa.
You have a very soothing voice. Do you get told that often?
I do get told that. I do.
You have a voice for radio.
Nice. I do have a radio voice. I wish I actually got more voiceover work. I've done some, but not a lot, because I don't know anything about it. I just get, when people come to me, I'm like, yeah, I'd love to, because I don't like to be in front of the camera, so.
Well, you've done all your own audiobooks, right?
Not all of them. I've done one, actually. One and a half. I did Hunger, and then Not That Bad is, no, actually I've done two, two in an intro. So Not That Bad is an anthology. And so I did the intro for that. And then I read Hunger and I read the re-release of my very first book, Aiti.
What was your experience like of doing audiobooks? Because I've done two and mm-hmm. I've listened to a hell of a lot more than two. And in thinking about how a lot of people are isolated right now, I was actually thinking about the experience of being alone in that booth for yeah. hours at a time. Like, how did you feel going through your text again? Because you really, when you do the audiobook, you really have to dig into the text all over again, sometimes for the first time in months, if not years.
I felt
years.
Fine, actually. Yeah, it was, you know, you're alone, but you're also not, because there are these two guys, or one guy, depending on the setup, in this booth, in the engineering booth, staring at you. And you can sometimes hear them chuckling or, you know, otherwise audibly responding to your work. And so that can be a little interesting. It's weird for sure to read your book. And certainly as a perfectionist, I would run across like some turns of phrase that I just thought, oh my God, Roxanne, you did that again? For Christ's sake. But on the whole, I was actually really pleased with how Hunger held up months after I had written it. I just was pleased with it. It wasn't perfect, but I wasn't going for perfect. It was done, and it was such a difficult book to write that it felt really good to just have it done.
That's what I was thinking about with regard to Hunger, because when you dig in, like my first audiobook was my memoir, Agoraphobulous, which is about suicidal depression and agoraphobia. And I had not, I think we got the audiobook deal like 2 years after the book came out. So I hadn't dug back into it. And actually my audio engineer, Keith Reynolds, later left Audible in Newark, New Jersey, and moved to Dallas with his wife and started the company Spoke Media that's doing the production for this podcast. So we've been friends for years now. Yeah, you know, you kind of bond. I mean, I'm sure you saw when you were doing Hunger too, like even when they're very professional, when you're reading, and my guess would be that you see this at bookstore readings too, when somebody is confronted with you as the author reading about something really dark, it does emotionally affect them, I think.
It does.
They might not weep, but it does.
It does, because there's an immediacy. And, you know, when you are reading a book in the privacy of your own home or on the subway or wherever, you have that distance where you know it's a real person, but there's that remove. But when you're, like, looking right at them as they read the book, and you have to start to confront the things that they've had to deal with, I think it becomes an entirely different proposition.
Well, this is a totally random other tack, but I just remembered that I'm supposed to tell you this. Sebastian Roche, Sebastian Roche, who I interviewed yesterday, said to tell you that he asked, I think the EP at General Hospital, he said, you know, could Roxanne come and do a tour if she wanted? I met her at an Emily's List event, and he said she like freaked out and got really excited. So he said to tell you that if you, once everything's okay, if you want to do a tour.
I would die. Yes, I would love it. I've been watching General Hospital. I haven't watched in years now. I would say 2 or 3 years just because of my travel schedule. But I love GH. Like, I have watched it since I was in my early 20s, so I've watched it for about 25 years, and it would be thrilling. It's so interesting because there are so many new characters, and I'm like, who the fuck are you? And then there are my usuals who are still hanging out, Sam and Jason, you know, love finds a way. So it's a lot of fun to see like that soap operas, which I think are sadly not long for this world. At least that they're still, like, you know, Days of Our Lives and General Hospital are still recording, which I think is really good.
Yeah, I think that creates a continuity for people. And I get chills talking about soaps because even though they get dunked on a lot, they so many of them have persisted. And even the ones that died, I mean, One Life to Live died a lot, was canceled a lot later than one would think, given the rise of the internet in the 90s and passions and things like that. And I mean, I've watched GH probably
It used to come on after, I was like a One Life to Live family, and then it would mm-hmm. come after, GH would come on after, I think, so I would watch it after school, and I got into it in high school, because this cool girl I liked in school liked it, and then I got hooked, and like, Maurice Bernard, like, what he does in talking about bipolar openly mm-hmm. and talking about mental health is so moving. Like, I think that undoubtedly saves lives when somebody like that, who's been part of the fabric of your imaginary life, speaks up openly about that. That's so meaningful.
It really is. I think that Maurice Bernard in particular did a lot to destigmatize bipolar disorder for an audience that isn't necessarily on social media and isn't sort of at the forefront of activism and understanding the nuances of mental health, in the same way that people who are really digitally engaged are. Sometimes, that's not necessarily a given, but you know, I think it's really great what he's done, and also he just plays a really great character, an irredeemable character, but a really great character.
He is, he's so and still so handsome. I'm always like, ooh, he's so good.
Yes, he is super hot.
I saw depictions of queerness in soap operas, in some cases before I saw it in what we would call prestige television or mm-hmm. primetime viewing. Do you remember?
Also interracial relationships.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, do you remember the different, like maybe you don't remember specific moments, but do you remember the different ways in which soaps have done kind of things that you noticed that were just seemed to be ahead of the curve? I remember mammograms, actually, when people weren't talking about mammograms.
You know, I think almost every sort of important, especially for women, every important issue a woman might face has definitely been covered. But we've seen same-sex relationships, sexual assault, the pay gap, oddly enough, women's ambition, and children and like having it all, like work-life balance, mental health. They've really sort of been ahead of the curve on all of the issues that eventually do make it to prime time. And I think it's interesting because it's ongoing. You know, people, like you said, people do dunk on soap operas, but there's something to be said for a show that can maintain a story, for better and worse, for more than 40, 50 years. It's incredible. And to cover so many issues. But also, they do it without making it feel like medicine. It's just, you know, fucking entertaining. Like, this ridiculous thing happened. And, oh my God, and Marlena is possessed and is levitating. Like, these are things that happened. I remember I wasn't a Passions watcher, but I remember on Passions, there was like this like witch doll or like yes. something like that. Yeah. And the doll talked and was a person, an actor, actually. But only some people could see the talking doll. It was wild.
I remember watching it and being like, is that her baby? Because it was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then it could fly. At one point, I think a lady was flying with it. And I was like, this is great. Like, I don't know what yep. the fuck is happening, but this is
It was wonderful. Fantastic. Like, she would take him on little trips. It was just delightful. And I was just here for it. I just was absolutely here for it. It was so great.
My mother said to me once, she said, so if you're bisexual, does that mean that you have a girlfriend and a boyfriend always? And she asked it in such a sweet way. And in further talking, and she said, and is that the same as sexually fluid? And I was like, that's when I was like, wait, who told you that? She mm-hmm. saw it was on General Hospital. They talked about Sonny's daughter. I don't think it wasn't a gender thing. It was like a pansexuality thing. And that brought up some questions from my mom, who's very accommodating and inclusive. She just asked, what's the right way to say it? And she literally didn't, you know, why would she know what polyamory was? You know, right. Like, I mean, if she did, it would be very interesting for me. I'd be like, ooh.
Go on.
But it was such a perfect example of that. And I can go home, visit mom and dad, and drop in on GH a few times a year and pick right back up. I'll be like, who's that? And they'll be like, hold on, let me tell you this. And it's always something wild.
Yes. And it's always interesting to watch parents grappling with language and like really meaning well and just trying to get in there and have these conversations. And I love when social media, or not social media, excuse me, Jesus. I love when pop culture facilitates that in some way.
Yeah, I think that's often the way that we have these conversations. It makes it safe, because if there's a vampire on an imaginary planet who's in love with a werewolf and they're both coded as male, like sometimes that's easier for somebody to talk about. And I don't say that in a condescending way. It's been easier for me to talk about stuff, seeing it in popular culture sometimes. What were your go-to sort of, did you use TV as an escape as a kid, or was it more books, or maybe you were not using things as an escape as a kid? I was definitely into some stuff.
It was definitely books, and I wasn't allowed to watch TV as a child. So I did not get to escape with television. And so what I would do is read constantly, and we would go to the library, and I was just so charmed by the idea that you could take as many books as you want from the library. That was so awesome to me. And it was so great to just lose myself in the books that I was reading and not have to, you know, face certain things. And I was definitely a very shy child. And so, I didn't have to worry about shyness and dealing with other people and talking about things when I was reading. And so reading was my great escape, and it still is in many ways.
I miss the smell of libraries right now. Like, I just, when you brought that up, that was very vivid to me. That was such a comfort to me as a shy, frightened child. You could hide in those stacks.
Oh, for sure. Libraries are great. I miss everything right now. Like, you know, you start to realize just like how constricted, and it's such a privilege to be like, oh, I missed this, that, and the other, because there are people who can't afford to miss things who are out there working and not, you know, not even receiving like the protective equipment they need and are not being paid appropriately. So I recognize the privilege in this, but you know, the longer this goes on, the more I recognize, even though I'm a homebody and a loner, maybe I'd like to do that on my terms and not on a pandemic's terms. Like when you know there's nowhere to go and that you are putting other people at risk and putting yourself at risk to leave your home for anything that's not important, it becomes very frustrating. And you start to realize the things that you took for granted, like running errands and going to the library, which I love doing, and so on, especially in Los Angeles, where we have a really great library system. It's something I look forward to when life resumes.
I love the downtown central, the central public library branch in LA. And one thing that I love about it is that, and I'm sure you know this too, because I'm sure you've probably done Library Foundation events and things
like that.
But it was started... for our listeners, it's in this amazing, I guess, Art Deco kind of tower building. It's beautiful. And the foundation that supports the library was started when an unsolved arson occurred, I believe in the late 80s, and they lost millions of dollars worth of books. And also, that's priceless, too. They lost archives and information. So to get it back together, they started this foundation, which does things like make sure that the library can be open, you know, 6 or even 7 days a week. It's so special. And I really feel the loss of those community centers.
Absolutely.
Right now.
And if we feel the loss, you know, I imagine the people who use those places as community centers and places where they can access the internet and access the kinds of services that libraries increasingly are having to provide because our government refuses to provide the necessary infrastructure for people. That's a rant, but...
No, this podcast is for ranting. We like ranting. It's a place to get it all out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when this one thing that... Not one, there have been several things that this pandemic and the self-isolation has shown. It's just shown that, like, we knew our society was unequal, but that inequality becomes so pronounced in a circumstance like this, where you have to think, where are the unhomed washing their hands and getting the health care that they need when everything has become compromised? So, you know, I used to live downtown, and the downtown branch does so much social service work. And, you know, there's a huge gap right now that's not being filled. And it's really unfortunate.
I guess it was 2014. I'm trying to remember the year exactly. When the Ferguson Public Library became the epicenter of taking good care of the community and providing schooling and food and safety for kids and respite from harm and became an oasis and a sanctuary. And so I've been, you know, I don't have a lot to give, but I've given a little money, I would say, most years since then. And I like the updates that I get from their library director. And I was thinking about them and how that, the way that they came to function is actually in some ways how so many libraries have come to function since and probably a little bit prior, not under the same circumstances. But that is, a library is the first place where a lot of unhoused people in cities access care. It's the, a lot of times for people, the library is the only place they can go to the bathroom, yep. wash their hands, get air conditioning in temperatures like we have here sometimes, or in Phoenix, mm-hmm. Arizona, where you can die. It's so important. And I guess I'm wondering if you could advise folks about, you know, if they do have some extra dollars to spare. If they're listening to this, they're probably on the right side of the digital divide or have somebody who is, right? Because mm-hmm. they can access this. So if you have, like, even if it's $5, what do you think would be some good places where people could send that money right now?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't have an easy answer. I think right now the best thing anyone can do is put money directly into the hands of other people. I think that even though nonprofits right now are suffering as much as everyone else in terms of receiving money, when it has to trickle through these systems, not enough of your dollar is actually getting to people who can use it for tangible things like toilet paper and groceries and refilling prescriptions. You know, right now people don't need organizations to come to the rescue. They need a lot of money and they need it immediately. They don't need it in 5 weeks. They don't need it, you know, like a tax, you know, as a tax refund. They need it today. And so I think the best thing anyone can do, no matter what your means are, is to just put money in the hands of someone else. What I've been doing, and it's ridiculous and it's not enough, but is going on Twitter and just saying, I'm going to Venmo X number of people, X amount of dollars. And, you know, the number of requests that come in, it's appalling. Not that the requests are coming in, but that there are this many people in need of basic sustenance and basic subsistence. And so I've just been sending my money directly. And, you know, you are taking a chance when you do that because it could be, you know, a scammer on the other end. But, like, man, if you want to scam that hard for $100 and take food out of someone's mouth, like, karma is not on your side. So I've just been doing that, and I've been suggesting that just because I think it's helpful. But if you want to give to an organization, food banks need money. They don't need your disgusting old canned goods. Just give them money, and they will appropriately distribute that money. And I think that's a really good start.
I did that on Twitter because you did that. And then,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know other people who did it because you did it. I did it just for like a couple people. I was like, hey, mm-hmm. I can probably help out one or two people. I didn't give a number, but it was $50. And I was just like, and you know, the first two people who came in, I checked their profile to make sure they weren't a robot. But other than that, right. I was like, okay, because that's a drop in the bucket when you have the privilege to, I had time to diffuse my hair today. That's privilege. Mm-hmm. I have a chair to sit. That's beyond the food and the shelter and the work. Like, I'm, you know, that's a lot. And somebody without asking said to me, who doesn't know me that well, a couple weeks ago, said, what do you need? And I said, no, I'm okay. Thank you so much. Like, and they were like, they just Venmoed me a few $100. So to me, I'm just paying that forward. We all do mm-hmm. that. I don't know anybody in this world who has been helped by others who hasn't paid it forward in Correct. Some way. That's it's Correct. Healing for everybody.
It really is.
Oh, President Obama shouted you out on Twitter. I saw that and I was like, whoa! Did you freak out?
That was surreal. Yeah, you know, I like Obama. I think he was a reasonably good president. But at the same time, I was like, this is well and good. But my God, say something about what Trump is doing. Like, mm-hmm. get political. You're done. Like, your presidency is over. Your legacy is intact. Say something. And so I was truly honored. Truly. And I will always be honored because I think he's a good man. But man, he's also so apolitical that it's incredibly frustrating because right now we just can't afford apolitical bullshit. You know, we can't just afford to feel better about ourselves when we do the bare minimum. Say something, do something. You were the former president of the United States and you can do more than, you know, like he put some feel-good message on Twitter either yesterday or today talking about, you know, like how in difficult times people come together. And that's well and good, but he's preaching to the choir. Like he's preaching to people who already know this and who are already willing to come together. And so the thing is, I don't even know what he could do to make this okay. I think a lot of us look to him often and his wife, Michelle Obama, expecting them to somehow magically fix the world. And that's not how it works. And it's not their responsibility. But when I see what the Trump administration is getting away with and what lies ahead for people who don't have good governors, I just wish that there was someone in this world who could step forward and make people just realize like this is serious and we need to take it seriously and we need to look at what's not being done by the government and fill that void.
I would love to see, well, I also don't know what it would look like, but I do know that I feel as if I had a kind and benevolent, loving, flawed, but genuinely good stepdad my troubled other parent divorced that person, even though technically they had to leave, and then got married to a toxic, narcissistic sex abuser. And that's my horrible stepdad that I'm stuck with now. I feel like that on a national, on a big level, because the things that Trump does are so deeply reminiscent of an abusive family structure mm-hmm. and that dynamic.
And you see it with how he's interacting with governors, like when he tells the governor of Michigan, basically, that he's not going to send any assistance because he doesn't like her tone. When he pushes back on Yamiche Alcindor, an incredible journalist who's just doing her job and says, you people. Mm-hmm. It is very much an abusive dynamic. And when you look at like what's happening and you realize that he might actually get reelected, it's a bitter pill to swallow.
It's tough. This whole time I've been like thinking and talking with friends that I wouldn't be surprised. And this was before coronavirus. And now I was talking to a friend the other day saying, well, if he fucks this up spectacularly enough, maybe we'll, you know, actually vote him out. And I was like, honestly, even then. I don't think
there's anything he can do. I think he's right. And I think that he's going to lose the popular vote again.
Yes.
I do not think, unless something significant happens between now and November, I just don't see the Electoral College working in our favor. And it's really distressing to think about that. And I've said this for the past year and a half, but I don't want to say it in a way that makes people think, well, then I shouldn't get out and vote. But when you look at what's going on right now, where Trump is giving these press conferences every single day, when for the first year we couldn't get him to give a press conference, but he's realizing, oh, now I can get the attention that I need because I'm a narcissist.
Mm-hmm. He needs a supply.
Yeah. And there's no one stopping him. There's no Democratic response that has any teeth. It's just politics as usual. And it's so infuriating. Like, where the fuck is Joe Biden? Mm-hmm. I suspect he may not be doing well physically or something to just have disappeared. And if that's our best shot, I mean, come on. And this is what happens when you have two 80-year-old dudes as the final candidates. It's ridiculous. But, you know, at least Bernie Sanders has a plan. he mm-hmm. at least understands what is happening right now and how severe the problem is. And he's willing to get out there and he's in the Senate doing things. And you just think, okay, if we could rally instead of, you know, the establishment rallying around Biden, who I think is, it would be
I'm not excited about him.
Yeah, I'm not excited about him. He's going to get my vote because anyone, frankly, too. Anyone will get my vote. But, you know, at least Biden, at least Sanders has a plan. At least Sanders has some passion, even though he's not my candidate and I have some issues with some of his approach. He's going to at least make sure that the next time this happens, everyone will have health care.
I want to see some pep in your step. And I don't mean that from an ableist or ageist standpoint. I mean enthusiasm and
right.
genuine, like, fired up excitement. And I, you know, I share your concerns about some of the things that Sanders has done or not done. And some of the ways in which his, you know, base has behaved and not behaved, or a small minority, mm-hmm. let's say, small but loud minority of his base.
They may be small, but they are so significant and they're persistent. And some of them are, they scare me. But I don't hold, you know, you can't hold that against a candidate. Every candidate
has. Oh, I don't think that's his fault at all.
Yeah, like, every candidate has terrible people on their side. I just wish he would do more, like, just say something about it more. But, you know, like, pep and step is so important, and he has pep. And
he does.
Elizabeth
he wants
Warren
us to have nice
pep.
Things. So does she. Like, yeah. They want us to have good things.
They do. And they, like, you know, they're politicians. They're both politicians. And we have to just face that. But they do have that pep, and they do care, and they are progressive to different degrees. And Warren, of course, was my girl, like, candidate. And right now, I just think, man, if she could just step forward and she and Sanders could come together and just come together on a ticket one way or another, and we could just get Trump out of office and then figure the rest out later. I just think that would be so great. And that's not ever going to happen, but that's what I always hope for.
But what a delight. Them on a ticket, and them also, I can picture them, like, arguing about basically the same thing, but just slightly different approaches to getting it done, and then being okay with it and working it out. Like, those are two passionate people. I'm like, those would be some spicy debates they would
absolutely
have.
And I think they would hold each other accountable. Mm-hmm. I think that they have already held each other accountable over the course of this current election cycle. And it would be great to see what they could do in office, or bring in a Stacey Abrams, who I think mm-hmm. would do some wonderful work. Kamala Harris, perhaps. Really, it does. You know, there are so many candidates on the Democratic side that are so much better than Joe Biden. But here we are. Here mm-hmm. we are.
I have Stacey Abrams on my 2020 vision board, along with mm-hmm. a desire for a stable, loving, healthy, and sexually fulfilling relationship, as well as learning to be better at cooking. The vision board mm-hmm. has a lot, but Stacey Abrams is on it.
That's a good level of ambition. I think it's a very ambitious but realistic vision board. I'm into it.
Now, Stacey Abrams is a fellow novelist, or she's a fellow author, but I don't know if she's a fellow baker. And before we go, first of all, I'll obviously need to interview her. But second of all, I would like to know about your baking practice at the moment and anything mm-hmm. else that you, because I always want to ask people who come on this program, what you do to keep your shit mostly together. You know, what is helping you these days?
So baking has helped me cope. Just trying to pay some of my luck forward. Not luck, I've worked my ass off, but still, it's also luck. It's a combination of luck and work. And to just be able to pay some of it forward, even though, like, you know, I'm just trying not to lose my shit because I've lost all my income and I actually have no idea what I'm going to do. I'm not even trying to pay my mortgage this month. I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck you want me to do with this, but it's not getting paid.
Because all your speaking engagements are canceled.
Because I make most of my living beyond books, speaking on college campuses. And so when the campuses started closing, I was like, oh, and at the same time, my magazine that I was running, which is the other half of my salary, closed. So it was just a perfect storm of fuck me. And I'm like, don't cry for me. It's going to be okay. I'm in a relationship and with a partner who has a job. And so we're going to be fine. But it's so overwhelming that I have found that instead of stressing and getting woe is me, helping others at least makes me feel like I'm doing something less useless than sitting around feeling woe is me. And baking just feels good. Like, you know, eat your feelings, whatever. It's fine.
What's your go-to thing? For me, it's cinnamon rolls. I don't make good ones, but I bake them because it smells good and it feels good to knead the dough. Or this isn't baking, but pasta. Using the hand-cranked pasta machine, that's very good. What is it for you?
That's like, a good what question. Helps you? It's nothing specific. It's just the act of baking. So I just, because I have all this free time now, I'm just trying all the recipes that I've never had the time to try. The time intensive ones. I made focaccia yesterday, which is a 2-day process. I've made croissant and I'm getting better at it. It's the first time they looked like croissant. And so I'm going to give it another go at some point when I can find butter. And so, you know, cookies, chocolate chip cookies, this, like today I'm going to make meringues, even though I hate them because my wife likes them. So,
that's just true. A that's range true of things. Love. That's
it true is true love, but it's also helping me out because I need to not eat as much of the baked goods. And so it's useful when I can give them away or when I can make things that I don't like, because I really do just enjoy the act of baking. If I could own a little bakery and just bake all day and make people happy and feed them, I would be really, really content.
Do you think that this is where you get a cookbook contract and start your new career as like, you know, Nancy Birtwistle?
I wouldn't be sad if I got a cookbook contract. I would figure it out. I would have a lot of fun doing that. Once I finish the other books I have to finish, I think it would be a lot of fun to do a book about cooking and baking because I do both and I enjoy both. And I do think there's a book project there. I just have to think about what that project might look like.
I'm going to soft pitch you an idea.
It's called,
okay, I want it to look, first of all, very generic. I want it to look like something that was maybe like a spinoff of Red Book magazine in the 70s or 80s. I would really like it to be lit in that very sort of 70s cookbook way that looks like a JCPenney catalog. Weird colors. I would like to call it Fun Times at Home with Roxanne. And I would like you to be on the cover. But I really want your like hand. I want your chin on your fist and a real dorky smile. And I also would like to request that you are wearing an apron that says Kiss the Cook, and I need exposed brick in the background. I don't know why, but I need that also.
Okay. that's a lot. That's a very specific vision, but I embrace that vision. I'm going to think about all that
because
you've given
it.
Me quite a lot.
You're the best network executive ever.
I really would. I've sat in enough meetings with them now to know the spiel. Just say, like, be affirmative and then do nothing. But I will actually take your feet. I love that idea of that cover. And I know exactly the aesthetic you're talking about. Yes. And I would love that aesthetic in a cookbook. That would be so much fun.
When I look at those cookbooks now, it'll be like a recipe for some sort of gelatin thing. A lot of convenience foods, which is nice because it sort of reflects like who was buying the books and the economic change that was happening 60s and 70s. But it'll be like something that's supposed to be a beautiful emerald green. But because of the lighting or maybe it always has a tinge of like like it was shot in an office with a drop ceiling and very like bare fluorescent bulbs. And I just love it so much. And that's my vision for you, my friend.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I think this career goes next. Well,
what are you? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what are you doing to stay sane?
Well,
or on an even keel.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I'm fine with the saying. One time I was speaking at a school. I don't speak that much. I just had like 2 gigs canceled, but I have a day job at a nonprofit, so I keep busy doing digital marketing there. And that's helpful because gives me, first of all, very grateful for the job every day. And second of all, it gives me structure and purpose because I would sleep, you know, I started the gig in 2017. And I was drinking a lot. I was just, I think I lived on Doritos. I don't know, I don't even like Doritos, but I would have eaten them when I was drinking a lot. I was living on crap, and the job was part of why I got sober. It's part of, you know, it's on an East Coast schedule, so I start work at 6 or 7 a.m. It has been an integral part of me feeling like I have meaning and purpose, especially at this time, because we do serve people right now in a, I never say the name of the organization, but we serve people in a healthcare capacity, and that's the side that I work on. So it's, I have a lot of meaning from that. That helps. I adopted a cat, so that helps too.
Good.
Her name is Polly, and I meditate, and I do my sobriety meetings online or on the phone every day.
Are they doing meetings online? I've been thinking about that. Like, what are people in AA and NA doing right now?
Yeah, it's a lot of online meetings, and they are highly enjoyable because sometimes it's Zoom with literally 400 people, and it doesn't work, or sometimes it does. But other times, it's I'll dial in to just telephone meetings, and I get to hear accents from all over the country, and I find it very comforting.
Oh, like, excellent.
Because those meetings were set up originally for people who, because of ability or lack of transportation, can't make it to a physical meeting. So it's a lot of very old people and also confused younger people who are like, how do I dial what dialing? And it's very cute. It's like the inverse of the Zoom experience, but it's good. Well,
good.
Thank you so much for spending the time chatting with me. This means a lot to me.
You're really welcome.
Also,
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I was also going to say that the scarf on your head pink? Is it like bright pink or is it red?
What? The scarf? I have?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fuchsia. Yeah, it's bright pink.
I love it. I was wondering just because sometimes the lighting with Skype is off, but just seeing that like fuchsia, honestly, made me feel better. Beyond your beautiful face.
Oh, thank you.
Just a color pop. Just
a little pop.
I can't wait for your new cookbook career and your inevitable cookbook empire.
Thank you. From your lips to God's ears. We'll see.
And that was the excellent Roxane Gay. I really hope that you enjoyed it. She's at rgay on Twitter, and you can find her books everywhere. I really suggest getting her books or her audio books. As you have heard, she indeed has done some, so that's pretty cool. I am giving away 3 copies of my own book, Agora Fabulous, Dispatches from My Bedroom. I've published 5 books, but that was my first, and it, you know, is meaningful to me because it has to do with anxiety and depression and the healing power of humor and all those things, but specifically to do with agoraphobia. So I'm giving away 3 signed copies. If you would like one, email me. Sarah@sarahbenincasa.com. You can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/sarahbenincasa. patreon.com/sarabenincasa. And you also can just be awesome and subscribe. That helps. Writing reviews really helps. I know you hear people on podcasts say that. And it's because it's true. Writing reviews helps. Rating the podcast highly if you like it helps. I appreciate you. I'm at Sarah J. Benincasa on Twitter and on Instagram. And we are at Well, This Isn't Normal on Instagram. Take good care of yourselves. I've been very tired lately because I've been so busy. And I'm grateful to be busy, but I realize I've been burning the candle at both ends. So I'm going to go take a little rest right now. And I'm very glad that I can do that. Probably my cat will sleep on my chest, which is a thing she does now. It's fine. There's a lot of room there. She is welcome to. I hope you have a good day.